Okay, we got one more speech before a break. We're going to take it back to a 2L. You guys all know is Sam Weaver. And there he is. And his talk is called Direct Action in the Obama Age, Lessons from Oaxaca. Sam?
A couple of preliminary matters. Thanks to the SLC for giving me this proverbial soapbox to stand on. And also, I apologize if I speak quickly. I'm a little nervous, but I appreciate old cliches, so I just want you all to know I'm imagining you in your underwear. And also, congratulations, America. We elected Obama, and the world is safe, right? I wish. But the party's over, and now it's time for the real work to begin. He's done some great stuff so far. You know, he's really only been in office for a few days. But as I'm sure a lot of us are aware, there's a lot of political pressure on the Obama administration to rescind a lot of its campaign promises. And if you're like me, which I assume at least a few of you are, you don't want that to happen. He promised to do some pretty cool stuff, so we'd like to see them follow through on that. Now, I think one of the best ways to put pressure on an administration is through the tactic of direct action. And I don't just mean protest when I say that. A lot of people hear direct action and think protest. I mean people engaged in real politics, being that it's making decisions for yourself and for your community as part of a community. So coming together and working together toward common goals. And it really goes back to that classic political maxim, power in the hands of the people. And we, the people, are essentially the source of our government's power. So, I have a few remarks for you, my colleagues, and anyone you might like to share these ideas with. The first, of course, is just say no to renewed apathy. And I think that's one of the most important things. You know, a lot of people worked very hard to see change in this country. But if we just sit down and allow the political forces that be to continue what I see as their rampage, it's all for nothing. And we also have to realize that we can't do it ourselves. As Peter Kropotkin once said, individualism, narrowly egotistic, is incapable of inspiring anybody. There is nothing greater gripping in it. Individually can attain its supreme development only in the highest common social effort. And I also think that we shouldn't necessarily look to conventional forms of organizing in that, you know, Western or American or whatever. I think we should look to other places and other people that are engaged in struggle around the world and see how they do things. And I especially think that systems of government organized on indigenous forms of government are really particularly educational, especially, you know, when you consider that our form of American democracy is based at least in part on the political theories developed by the Iroquois Nation. So that's cool. And now we get to Oaxaca. I say Oaxaca, some people, I mean, I don't know. I apologize if I offend anyone's sensibilities with my pronunciation. But the story of Oaxaca is a pretty interesting one, and unfortunately I don't have the time to do it justice here, but I'll do what I can. The movement started in June 2006 as a teacher's strike in Oaxaca City, in Oaxaca, a southern state in Mexico. And the teachers were organizing for educational reform and so on and so forth. But the sort of key thing was that the governor, called Ruiz, was a dirty, corrupt scoundrel, really. It was all about corruption and nepotism in his regime. And so the movement became something more than that. It became a movement to kick the bastard out, essentially. And it really served to unite the community around this idea and this goal. But you couldn't just unite a community around a goal. You had to unite them through an organizing principle. And so the groups in Oaxaca created what they called people's assemblies. And the principal one being in Oaxaca City, and also a number of others in occupied town halls throughout the state. Now, it was formed as an alternative to Ruiz's government, and it was also intended to support the movement and eventually replace the state government if and when the movement was successful. Now, of particular note is the governance style of the assemblies. It was based on the traditional system of uses and customs, in which towns govern themselves through open assemblies, and political parties are not allowed. Now, the modern assemblies in Awaka were intended to create public space in which people could exercise their constitutional rights, and also develop political positions that meaningfully reflected the political and social realities they faced. Because obviously the state government wasn't doing that. You know, Ruiz was more concerned with lining his pockets than anything else. So, but it was also designed to ensure that the leaders faithfully responded to the will of the people, which was rather key. And I think it's worth noting that the first assembly, and they grew much larger after this, had 170 people attending, representing 85 different organizations. And just the fact that they were able to you know, bring that many people together and organize around that many organizations at the first meeting, I think is really really inspiring. Unfortunately, the movement was not successful. It ended with federal police repression, rather violently, in fact. Some fairly interesting accounts of the street battles that went down there. But the popular assemblies to this day remain somewhat viable. The participants are in hiding, based mainly on the fact that, well, if they don't, they'll get disappeared, which is never good. So that's that. But I guess you know, the connection between the Obama administration and an uprising in southern Mexico is, of course, that style of political organization, which is, I think, really useful when those of us who are interested in going out and organizing people and trying to work for change, we can really sort of take a leaf from their book. The first thing I think that is important, this sort of goes back to Abel's great characterization of anarchism, is that it's horizontal. There's not really a hierarchical leadership structure. But it's also based on reciprocity and respect. So as a member of this group, you're expected to do certain things, and other group members are expected to do certain things, and you respect everyone's decision. And decisions are made, based on consensus, but it takes a while, but it faithfully represents the wishes of all the participants. Now this is especially useful when you're working with a large group of people, or when you're working with people from different organizations who might have different goals, but the overall goal is the same and all that. Essentially, everyone's happy. I think another thing that's really important is that it's nonpartisan. So you remove the sort of edifice of party politics from the thing, and people can come together who have common goals that might not belong to the same party or adhere to the same political philosophy, but they can come together and talk about solutions and start working toward their common goals, which I think is important. And the next thing that I think is useful is what I like to call trickle-up politics, to sort of butcher Reaganomics. And it's essentially that with this sort of organizing model, you can begin with sort of large local groups, and they can make decisions and come up with alternatives, and then send representatives to regional, state, or even national groups that can begin to shape sort of a national or a regional platform based on these local platforms. And through that, you get people at the base, these traditionally marginalized people that have gotten politically interested through the Obama campaign, election, inauguration. You show them that they can do it. They can stay involved in politics, and they can have an influence on the direction of policy. And I think that's the most important aspect of this. And I also think, you know, I mean, a lot of people scoff at this sort of organizing principle, saying it's too big, it would never work. But I think the power of the internet is really expressive here and really important, because it allows for instantaneous mass communication. So I think it's possible through sort of paradigms of organizing through the internet. So I'll kind of wrap up here, but I have a few results that I wanted to talk about that I kind of see happening if we were interested in ever trying to do this in real life. The first is that it allows us to put consistent pressure on the political machinery, in that people are organized, they are interested, they are passionate, and they're actively engaged in telling their government what they want to see it do. So you can hold them to their promises. It also helps people maintain the sort of political exuberance that was developed through this historic election campaign, and helps marginalized people, or traditionally marginalized people, stay involved. But it also helps people like us stay involved, because I think, you know, we also get apathetic and we also get jaded about the system of politics that we've grown up in. Let's see. And I mean, it creates the conditions through which movements can develop quickly and organically. They can grow up in localities and, you know, sort of seek out the other groups working in their region and all that and build up from there. And it also allows people to agitate for change without the need for violence or constant antagonistic contact with the government. So I think that's also useful because being a mostly a pacifist myself, I'd hate to see, resortation to violence to try and get things done. So essentially, in conclusion, the application of this sort of decision-making model might be a challenge. I say might with a grain of salt. It would be a challenge because it's, you know, especially when you're working with nonprofit organizations and stuff, it's like herding cats. Not easy. But it also provides for a great way to keep people engaged and excited about politics while simultaneously agitating for change. And I think that goal and that aspiration far outweighs any challenge. So. All right.